Unfiltered.
I'm not sold. I'm sorry.
Unapologetic.
I'm not trying to talk about him.
Unlike anyone else.
But knowing y'all.
Y'all will probably make me.
This is the Stephen A. Smith Show.
We are the New York Knicks. We are the New York Knicks. We are the New York Knicks. We are the New York Knicks.
It's your boy Stephen A. in the house, right here live on SiriusXM Mad Dog Sports Radio, coming at you every weekday like I love to do from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Number to call up as always is 888-MAD-DOG-6. That's 888-623-3646. I love everybody. I just want to say that. I love everybody. Even that whack-ass caller that just called in near the tail end, Katie Nolan's show, my lead in, talking about he can't stand New York Knicks fans. What difference does it make? You're just going to go to the finals and lose anyway. Well, damn it, get to the finals counts. Damn it, you got to crawl before we walk. We don't care. I don't care what anybody says. I couldn't be more happier that the New York Knicks did what I told everybody yesterday they were going to do, which was stomp the Atlanta Hawks the way that they should. I told y'all. The people in Atlanta, okay? Listen, I'm sorry to break it to you, okay? You understand what I'm saying? There was no magic in the city last night. I can tell you that right now. The Atlanta Hawks got stomped, romped in epic fashion. And the New York Knicks now have folks legitimately fantasizing about a trip to the NBA Finals. In other words, let me put it quite plainly for you. New York Knicks going to the Finals. New York Knicks going to the Finals. Now, you might sit up there and say, I'm out of there. I'm just fair-weathered. It's just prisoner of the moment, all of that other stuff. I would say to you, you're not paying attention to what's going on. Before I get into all of that, validating for you why the New York Knicks are going to the NBA Finals, first let me highlight for you what happened last night in the ATL. The New York Knicks were up at halftime by 47. 47-point lead at halftime. You talk about a basketball abomination, the likes of which we have not seen. It showed up in the ATL last night. The New York Knicks were up 40-15 before the Atlanta Hawks had an opportunity to pass gas. Knicks had as many steals as the Hawks had field goals made in the first half with 12. Atlanta had more turnovers than baskets made in the first half. I mean, just complete and utter domination. With about 8 minutes and 21 seconds left in the third quarter, the New York Knicks were up 101-40. 101-40. They were up by 61 points. It's hard to put into words. It's hard to put into words. OG Anunoby was balling out, had 29 points, best player for the New York Knicks. Karl Anthony Towns had a triple-double, you know, showing his versatility. Mikal Bridges, 24 points, 10 of 12 field goals. Very happy to see that from him. We'll need that. We will need that. No doubt about it. Okay? But the New York Knicks and their defense, they looked like a pack of piranhas. I mean, the Hawks couldn't do a damn thing. The New York Knicks were all over them. They couldn't breathe. The New York Knicks suffocated them, swarmed them, overwhelmed them at every turn. And as a result, they ended up ending this series, taking the Atlanta Hawks out in 6 games, advancing to the Eastern Conference semifinals, okay? Fourth consecutive year, the New York Knicks have done that. Their longest streak since a 9-year run from 1992 to 2000, by the way. And in those games, these last 3 games, New York Knicks averaging, after being down 2-1, losing back-to-back 1-point games to the Atlanta Hawks, the New York Knicks outscored them in the last 3 games by 96 points, averaging 126.7 points, shooting 55% from the field, 41% from 3-point range, and out-rebounding them by 37. Playing big boy basketball, the Atlanta Hawks had no answer to. And as a result, it is what it is. Let me say this before I talk to you about why the New York Knicks going to the finals. Let me say this to you. If I were the owner of the Atlanta Hawks, Quinn Snyder and his coaching staff wouldn't have made it out of the building with a job. They wouldn't have made it out of the building with a job. They'd have been fired immediately. To be on your home turf in a closeout game, even in a blowout loss, that happens. When we see somebody down by 47 points in the first half, down by 47 points in the first half, they wouldn't have left the building with a job. I'm telling you that right now. They wouldn't have left the building with a job working for me. That wouldn't have happened. Hell no. Completely, utterly, and totally ill-prepared to deal with the onslaught that the New York Knicks brought their way. And as a result, the New York Knicks are moving on. Let me tell you why I think the New York Knicks are going to the finals. It's not just because of the way they've played over these last three games. And I understand, as I'm sure my man Doggy will remind you during his afternoon drive show, that the Atlanta Hawks are not the Boston Celtics of yesteryear or the Los Angeles Lakers or anybody like that. I mean, come on. The Atlanta Hawks are not there. They're not ready. Okay, they're not that good of a team. They're a good, they're a decent young team with a lot of promise and some upside, but they ain't there yet. We got that part. Here's what you have to understand, and here's what you have to pay attention to. It's not about them. It's about the New York Knicks. It's about what Brunson is capable of. It's about what Karl Anthony Towns is capable of. It's about what the Knicks collectively are capable of. From top to bottom, they can compete with anybody in the Eastern Conference if they play their game. And at times we haven't seen that, but the reality is they have experience. They have veteran leadership. They've got athleticism. They've got shot makers. And they have a unit that can be elite defensively. So we got to give credit where credit is due. But here's the other side to all of this. Nobody's looking like they were supposed to look. We've got the Boston Celtics that were up 3-1. Now the series is tied 3-3. And the Sixers look like they're about to take Boston out in Game 7. Because let me tell y'all something right now. Jaylen Brown, a top 5 league MVP candidate, who spent most of the season as a top 3 league MVP candidate, was a minus 24 on the basketball court yesterday. Paul George D'ing him up, validating his max deal, putting in 23 points, but also showing up on the defensive end, giving Jaylen Brown all types of problems. Okay? That's one element. Element two. Tyrese Maxey, Paul George, VJ Edgecombe. There's something to deal with. You can't summarily dismiss these brothers and what the Sixers bring to the table. You can't do it. These brothers can take over, and Tyrese Maxey is a superstar in this game. Tyrese Maxey is no joke. He's a special ball player, okay? And he shows up. So you got that going on. But the number one thing to pay attention to is that Joel Embiid wasn't even supposed to play in this series because of that appendectomy that he had. He comes back, didn't look so great in game 4. In games 5 and 6 has looked like an absolute monster and Boston has absolutely no answer for. Joel Embiid is doing his thing. And if Joel Embiid is capable of giving you anything, even a 19 and a 10 and 8 that he gave you last night after he gave you 33 in game 5, if Joel Embiid gives you anything, Philly's winning this series. And here's one of the biggest reasons why. Did you see Jason Tatum? And the calf injury, calf tightened up, he said. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not that simple. Game 4 of the NBA playoffs last year, Jason Tatum tore his Achilles. Jason Tatum worked diligently to come back and to be everything that Boston needed him to be. And over the last 10-plus games or so, he's been that, averaging better than 25 a game, doing the kind of things that he's capable of doing, giving you 10 rebounds, about 7 assists, stuff like that. Jason Tatum been special. And he hasn't even found his 3-point shot back yet. But you got to remember something with an Achilles injury, y'all. With an Achilles tear, right? What happens is that you may heal that. And you may, you know, you may overcome that. But in the process of doing so, because you've trained and you've gotten yourself in the right kind of conditioning, okay? Because you've got yourself in that right kind of conditioning, here's what you have to keep in mind, because it's very, very important to point this out: overcompensation. Because while you're healing that injury, you're overcompensating on your leg. I remember the great Tim Grover, who used to train Michael Jordan, friend of mine, wonderful dude. He texted me this morning. Remember what I told you years ago about the Achilles. I've never been worried about the surgical one. My concern was always the other leg when a player comes back. Because you're overcompensating on that one leg. Which is what Tatum may have done. Rubbing that calf, that reminded me a little bit too much of Kevin Durant when he tore his Achilles. And we saw Tyrese Halliburton go down. We saw Jason Tatum go down. We saw Damian Lillard come down. And Halliburton and Lillard have not come back. But Tatum rushed back because Boston is in a position to compete for a championship. And we were looking at them as arguably the best team in the Eastern Conference. But now, because of that tightness, he had to come out of the game. Now you got a game 7 Saturday. I'm here to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know about y'all and how y'all feel about it. Feel free to tell me at 888-MAD-DOG-6, 888-623-3646. I'm not playing Jason Tatum if I'm the Boston Celtics. I got a $350 million investment in this brother. I'm not playing him. I'm not. I see him rubbing that other leg. I know the possibility of him incurring and sustaining another serious injury, this time on the other leg. I'm not doing it. I'm sitting him down. He's not playing until next season. Jaylen Brown, you was an MVP candidate. Without him doing your thing all year long, do it again. At least for one game to get us through game 7 and advance us to the Eastern Conference semifinals like we did last year. At least do that. That's what I need from Jaylen Brown. I'm the Boston Celtics. I'm not playing Jason Tatum. I'm not taking that chance. It's too valuable, too important of an investment for me to do that. I'm not taking that chance with him. I'm not doing it. No. 888-MAD-DOG-6. That's 888-623-3646. We'll get into the other games. Toronto and Cleveland. We'll get into Detroit and Orlando tonight. Because if it wasn't for Franz Wagner being out, I would easily think Orlando's going to win tonight and close Detroit out. But because that's not the case, Detroit could win tonight, and then I definitely think that Detroit will win a Game 7 back in Detroit, even though I'm still giving Orlando a chance to win tonight. And then out west, you got Minnesota knocking out Jokic. Jamal Murray didn't show up last night. Love him, but he didn't show up last night to help Jokic at all. Jokic wasn't himself and was pretty much held in check. I know 25-13-9 is not necessarily being held in check because that's what he averaged in the series. But the bottom line is Rudy Gobert did a hell of a job on Nikola Jokic, and Jokic knows that. Jokic knows that. And then the last thing to think about, even with Minnesota knocking off Denver, Oklahoma City finishing off Phoenix via sweep, San Antonio finishing off Portland in 5. And then, of course, you got the Lakers going up against the Houston Rockets. Now, everybody, let me tell y'all something. Luka's out. Austin Reeves got back, but damn it, he's still rusty. LeBron James, 41 years of age, in his 23rd season. Under no circumstances should the level of accountability be thrown in LeBron James' direction like some people would be tempted to if the Lakers lose. But if we keeping it a buck, we know that ain't going to happen. If we're being honest, we know that's not going to happen. If we're being totally, totally honest, and we need to, here's the important point to take into consideration. Throughout NBA history, 159 teams in NBA history, playoff history, have been up 3-0 in a series. None of them lost. None. 159-0. And now the Los Angeles Lakers, who were up 3-0, have lost two straight. And I think Houston's going to win tonight. They won game five at Crypto.com Arena in L.A. on Wednesday night with five starters 24 years old or less. They're young spring chickens. Easton and Jabari Smith Jr. and Operin Shagoon and Amen Thompson. Reed Shepard and these boys. Nobody's over 24. So when LeBron James looked flat and fatigued, it looked like I said, and even though he had 25.7 assists, the bottom line is that he looked a bit flat at times. His jumper just wasn't there. His legs didn't look fresh despite having 2 days rest. These brothers were thoroughbreds. Amen Thompson played 45 minutes and barely looked like he broke a sweat. These brothers in shape, and they're young, and they're hungry. And, oh, by the way, they want to show that they can win without Kevin Durant. Without Kevin Durant, who only played one game in the series, in game two. They want to show they can win without him. And I think they're going to tie this series up tonight in Houston. And if that happens, then that means there's a Game 7 at Crypto.com Arena this Sunday afternoon. And that means that LeBron James will be on the court and in position to become the first player, the first superstar in NBA history to be associated with losing a 3-0 lead. Surrendering a 3-0 lead and losing a series for the first time in NBA history. And if that happens, what do you think they're going to say about LeBron James' legacy then? Now, I'm here to tell you, I don't think it would be fair. I think it would be wrong to criticize him. You don't have Luka, Austin Reeves just getting back with the oblique injury, not 100%. Other cats haven't stepped up. I don't think that's on LeBron. You 41 years of age, your 23rd season. I don't think it's right to sit up there and put it all on his shoulders like that. But we know people ain't going to listen to that. We know from an historical perspective, they ain't going to remember all of that. All they going to remember is you were good enough to go up 3-0 without Luka and AR. How come you wasn't good enough to avoid losing four straight? And his name would be attached to all of it. Up 3-0. What I'm saying is, from a legacy perspective, LeBron James can't afford to lose the series. He cannot afford to lose the series. There ain't no other way to slice it. He can't afford to lose the series. Not to a Houston Rockets team that's been without a point guard all year, that's been one of the worst teams in the league in clutch time and fourth quarters overall, and who, by the way, came into this playoff series without the services of Kevin Durant, who sustained a knee contusion that made him miss game one, came back and played game two despite not being 100%, and then has been out ever since with an ankle injury. You can't lose four straight to that. You can't lose a 3-0 lead to that team. You can't. You do that, and the legacy of LeBron James will at least be a topic of discussion. There's no way around it. Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, the ultimate NBA insider in the world today, my colleague, my buddy from ESPN, the one and only Sham Sharania, is on the show with yours truly right now. What's up, Big Time? How you doing, man? How's everything?
I say, what's good? What's going on? How are you?
My man, how many years Have you been covering basketball? I only ask that question because I'm pretty sure you've never seen a beatdown the likes of what we witnessed last night in Atlanta, Georgia. Am I correct in saying that?
I've been covering it for 16 years, but not at the level of like right now, right? Like that's when I first started doing blogs and you know, features and really like starting to write 3,000-4,000 words a day. I don't even write, you know, 1,000 words sometimes in a year anymore, but that's like the early, early grind. And I know you know, our jobs, our lives, everything changes. We become specialty people. And like, that's what the job has become. But I didn't expect that at all. Like going into yesterday, I actually thought, and I don't give predictions, I said, I don't get up. Like if I had to have confidence, I would have more confidence in Atlanta taking it to 7 than I would Philly taking it to 7 and ended up being reversed. That's why I don't make predictions. That's why I don't like to get into that. But I mean, New York came out and that's exactly the way they look. That's exactly why they kept this team, how it's constructed. They love the depth. They love Jalen Brunson, OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges, Josh Hart, Karl Anthony Towns. Then you got Mitchell Robinson coming off the bench, and you've got multiple other players, Deuce McBride, that they feel like can be contributors. And they had a chance to go potentially get a Giannis last summer. You have a chance to do other moves or not do the Mikal trade, but they genuinely believe this team can compete. And a week ago, you're probably saying you're in a tough spot. You know, a few days ago, they were down, you know, 2-1 or it was tied 2-2 and the world was falling down. I was doing a SportsCenter hit and they were asking, you know, are there going to be major changes in New York? And they were, it was a 2-2 series. You know, but only in New York are you going to get that energy. And now you look at it, Boston is where they're at, and New York has handily gotten to the second round.
But you are the ultimate insider in the NBA right now. There's nobody bigger than you, and there's nobody that gets more information than you get. So from an informational perspective, what were you hearing would have happened had the New York Knicks continued that downward spiral of losing to the Atlanta Hawks as they did in games 2 and 3, and they had ended up losing this series? What would it have been like in New York City with the Knicks?
I say everyone I spoke to either around that situation, people around the league, everyone said the same thing. Everything is on the table if they had lost the first round. But, you know, I think you could probably say that with multiple teams that have championship expectations or the expectations of getting somewhere, especially when the owner, Jim Dolan, comes out and says within weeks of the season starting that this is like I expect a championship. I expect us to get to the finals. And once that bar is set, you're just trying to meet it. And anything short of that is a failure. So even now, Mike Brown and this front office group, the gauntlet has been laid. It's to try to get to the NBA finals, and anything short of that in Jim Dolan, their owner's eyes, is not successful. But I do think everything would have been on the table if they had lost that first round series, and we'll see how the next series goes and how they fare, how competitive it is.
Sean Serrania, let me transition to the Boston Celtics, because I saw them lose a game last night to the Philadelphia 76ers. And from a basketball standpoint, Embiid is just a difference maker. When he's on the court, he's just a difference maker. It's just that simple because he's so special. But Tyrese Maxey, Vijay Edgecombe, and Paul George showing up and defending against Jaylen Brown is something that obviously we can't ignore either. But my question to you would be about Jason Tatum and what you saw last night. Usually when people suffer a leg injury, whether it's your knee, Achilles, or whatever, when you're rehabbing, there is a tendency to overcompensate. Speaking to the great Tim Grover, who trained Michael Jordan for years, he had always told me that would always be a bigger concern. It's the other leg. It's the healthy leg that you overcompensate on when an injury to something else takes place. The other leg takes place. And that's what I was thinking about with Tatum last night. And I'm wondering whether or not the Boston Celtics have that kind of idea. Seeing Jason Tatum tighten up last night, knowing the kind of investment they've made in him, knowing that he came back earlier than was anticipated, what, if anything, are you hearing about what Boston's mindset is going into this game 7 as it pertains to playing Jason Tatum?
You made the exact point. Knowing the investment that they have in Jason Tatum, $300 million plus, and this is a guy that they're expecting and want to be there for the remainder of his career. They're going to take every stop to make sure that he's 100% when he gets on the floor and that he can play at 100% capacity. And so I don't know if you can hear these sirens. Hopefully,
yes,
hopefully
I can.
Not.
You saw right there. Don't worry about it. We good. Go ahead, man.
So the investment that they, and that's the same thing I heard when he was going through his Achilles. They're not letting him play unless they feel like he's checked every medical box. And that's why last night, I mean, I saw it like everyone else did, right? It looked like his calf or his leg area. And he said after the game, it stiffened up. And I know for a fact, he told teammates after the game, I'm good. I'm playing. It's fine. And Joe Mazzulla comes out and denies an injury even happened. And wow. He's playing tomorrow. Jason Tatum will be playing in game 7. Everyone's expecting it in Boston. And Joe Mazzulla has basically told everyone that'll listen that Jason Tatum is good and he is playing the next game.
What can you talk to us two parts about the Philadelphia 76ers? A, as it pertains to the status of Joel Embiid and how he's feeling after playing the last three games. But B, if the Philadelphia 76ers end up going home in the first round, despite them coming back from a 3-1 deficit tying this series or whatever, I'm not talking about Nick Nurse as much as I'm thinking about the future of Daryl Morey in Philadelphia, particularly in light of Josh Harris owning the team. He also owns the Washington Commanders of the National Football League. And we know one of his top advisors is a 4-time champion executive in Bob Myers. What can you tell us about the situation in Philadelphia and how things could potentially unfold for them in the event that they end up going home tomorrow night?
Our guy, Bob Myers, he's there, but he's not just doing Sixers stuff, right? Like, he's overseeing everything that Josh Harris's portfolio has, and that includes, obviously, Commanders. You got the NHL team. You've got so many different layers of business that Josh Harris is involved in, and the Sixers are a part of it. And you see Bob Myers sitting courtside at games. You know, he loves basketball. We both know that about him. He lives for it, whether he's in L.A., watching with his, you know, at home with his family, or if he's traveling on the East Coast. But this is a team for sure. Like, if they lose in the first round, there's going to be questions about, you know, I believe Nick Nurse and Daryl Morey have multiple years left on their contract. And so okay. What happens, you know, with the front office, what happens with the coaching staff? But at the end of the day, the other thing, Stephen A, to remember is the roster is pretty locked in. Like, the Paul George, Joel Embiid contracts. So if you are making a change, like, are you going to find someone that's really going to take that roster to another level? You have to give Nick Nurse a lot of credit for taking this Celtics team here to 7 games.
Sean Sharani right here with Stephen A. SiriusXM Mad Dog Sports Radio. Let's switch to the Western Conference. We saw Nikola Jokic go down last night to the Minnesota Timberwolves. I have to admit, I didn't expect that. And the reason I didn't expect that is not just because they lost Dante DiVincenzo and the team came in with wearing his jersey, you know, collectively, but also the Ant-Man himself, Anthony Edwards, is out. To know that both of those dudes were out, but for Minnesota to still handle its business the way that it did with Terrence Shannon and obviously Jaden McDaniels backing up his talk by dropping 32 and defending the way that he defended. We got to look at Denver a little bit differently. Jokic is due an extension, no doubt. 4 years, $293 million, if I remember correctly. Don't know the status of Jamal Murray, but the way he played, it just doesn't seem to be the same in Denver. What can you tell us about that series and, more importantly, about the future of the Denver Nuggets in light of Jokic even admitting if this was Serbia, everybody would be fired?
I mean, he's right. The overseas team do it way differently than any NBA team would. But definitely disappointment for Denver. When you lose Anthony Edwards, you're without Dante DiVincenzo. The Timberwolves were playing with house money when they got the 3-1 lead. There were people there that are like, listen, if we win, like, amazing. But there's a very good scenario that they lose that series. When you're down, you're starting backward. And then Ayo Dosunmu sits in game 6. And that, to me, was the biggest, like, Denver had to get that game. And they didn't get it. Jamal Murray struggled. The supporting cast struggled. Nikola Jokic put up a damn near triple-double again. But it just wasn't enough. And so he struggled at points this series. Jamal Murray, we know, struggled at different points this series. Aaron Gordon was out for the majority of the series. So this is a team that has a lot of questions now going into the offseason. I will tell you, Denver Nuggets, from their top brass on down to that organization, they believe Nikola Jokic at his word. He wants to be there. This is not a situation where he's talking about potentially leaving or looking elsewhere, or, you know, saying like, hey, I need you guys to do this, I need you guys to do that. You know, like, he's very, very internally and externally, I'm here. No matter what, I'm resigning. And so that's the approach. But SA, there are going to be changes in Denver. Don't know how much, but there's going to be some level of change, whether that's tinkering a couple of players around. But they are so strapped financially moving forward, and whether it's the tax, whether it's approaching the aprons, right, that there's going to be a lot of conversations about players on this roster.
Now, you know where I'm going next, and that's going to be the Houston Rockets going up against the Los Angeles Lakers. They were down 3-0. It's now 3-2. If Houston wins tonight, it's 3-3. And you know where I'm going, Shams. Luka's out. Austin Reeves back, but a little rusty. We understand that. But we know history ain't going to chronicle all of that. What they're going to chronicle is if the Houston Rockets come back and win this series, it will be the first team in NBA history that overcomes an 0-3 deficit in the playoffs and wins a series. And that will be attached to the legacy of LeBron James. What kind of talk is going on as this series progresses, knowing that Houston threw out a starting five the other night with no one older than 24 years of age, no Kevin Durant, and still managed to beat the Los Angeles Lakers? What's the kind of stuff you're hearing right now?
I say that's a crazy stat to me, and I said it on TV the other day. The Rockets made history. They have the youngest starting five in the NBA ever to win a playoff game. Like, that's, and to do it against the Lakers, LeBron, you have Austin Reeves coming back the last game. That's a veteran-laden team. Marcus Smart, DeAndre Ayton, Luke Kennard, these guys that have been in meaningful playoff moments and playoff games. And so I think if you're the Lakers, you need to find some semblance of what you had the first three games. And we saw LeBron James when he was the number one guy in the first three games. He had multiple days of rest in between games, and he was firing on all cylinders. He was amazing. And they got a 3-0 lead. And then it went every other day. And game four, I think it was 10 points, 8 turnovers. Then game five, Austin Reeves comes back. Still some turnovers. LeBron James, I think, overall had a good game. There were some finishes. There were other plays. But I think you have a chance to win that game if you're LA. That's the game that you have to get, especially with Austin Reeves back. And now I just look at it, and I think Houston has figured out a lot. I think they figured out how to play up-tempo. They figured out that if we send waves and waves of people of our youth at this veteran-laden team, I mean, you think about it, this is the exact type of youthful, talented team that should be able to beat the Lakers. And that's why it's like you put a Kevin Durant in this mix, you would think it would help and you'd think it would take you to the next level. But, you know, for whatever reason, it just didn't look like that in game two. But I think this young Rockets team seems like they have a lot of momentum right now on their side going into game six.
Do they feel like they're playing better without Kevin Durant?
I think that it's good for them to know whether he's going to be in the lineup or not, and if he's going to be 100% or not. I think when you look at, KD's 37, 38 years old, you're asking a guy like that who has a bruised tendon, misses game one, and then game two, you know he's still dealing with that, and then he gets the ankle sprain. So you have the bruised tendon in your right knee, and then you have a bone bruised sprained ankle in your left ankle. Like, at that age and the role that they have him playing, it's just not conducive to trying to win and to try to play at a high level. You need KD to be 100% with the role that they're having him play. So, yeah, I think if you're going to get a 60% Kevin Durant, I think you are possibly worse off with him on the floor than if you have – like, listen, if you have 100% Kevin Durant, you want that all day. But if he's not himself and the role that they have him playing, getting double teamed, having to slice through double teams and traffic and doing all that, it's just not conducive.
Real quickly, why the hell didn't the Houston Rockets go out and find a point guard, considering the fact that Fred VanVleet got hurt before the season even began? We've seen them in clutch time. We've seen them in the fourth quarter. We know it's something that plagued them throughout the season. Everybody talks about, you want to plan on beating the Houston Rockets, just keep it close until the fourth quarter. They'll fold, they'll collapse, even though that wasn't the case last night, because they don't have, astute, big-time elite point guard play, even though Reed Shepard has promise, and we'll look at him down the line in the future. Why the hell didn't they go out and get a point guard, Chumps?
I say it's for the reason you just laid out. They struggled for the majority of the year to close games. Everyone knew it. And then you see some growth, and you see guys closing out games. The Rockets made the decision when Fred VanVleet tore his ACL, that we would rather win, lose, stay alive or die by Reed Sheppard and Amen Thompson and letting them grow and seeing what they can do. For right or for wrong, they felt like that was their best path, not only for this year, but for the next several years, right? Like, these guys are all so young. They're all early 20s. I think Alperen Sengun's the oldest one out of them. I think he's 24, 25. Everyone else is like early 20s. And so you think about it, they are playing for as much development as they are trying to win now. And so that juxtaposition, that balance that you face every day is a challenge. It would be a lot easier if you have Fred VanVleet, right? Like, if you have Fred VanVleet, he sets the table. He actually provides levity where you're not as young. You actually had another guy that's kind of older on the older side, like Kevin Durant. And I think once Fred VanVleet got hurt, they had to make a decision. And for right or wrong, they decided we're going to live and die by our young players.
Sham Sharani, appreciate your time, man. I know you got to run, man. Go ahead and handle your business. I'll see you down the line, and you know I'll catch you as the playoffs progresses, man. Appreciate you, bro.
That's
Take care of yourself.
Appreciate you. Anytime. Thank you.
All right. One and only Sham Sharani, Ultimate NBA Insider for ESPN, my colleague, my buddy, right here with Stephen A., Stephen A. Smith Show, SiriusXM, Mad Dog Sports Radio. 888-MAD-DOG-6 is always the number to call up. That's 888-623-3646. Back with your calls and more in a minute. You're listening live to the Stephen A. Smith Show, SiriusXM, Mad Dog Sports Radio.